Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stopping, staring. I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going well, the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going well, the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast wind, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. I'm going where the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going where the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Wednesday, June the 9th, 2021. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports, part of Global Patriot Radio here on blogtalkradio.com. Yes, I am Hank Jones because I can be, because I wanted to be, because I should be. Mrs. Hank is over in the other side of Electric Hank Land, getting some work done. Industrious and whatnot. Of course, there are other shows on Blog Talk Radio's Global Patriot Radio Network. Every Monday, Vito and Al, Mamma Mia No Sharia. Great show. Great, great show. Tuesdays, Eric, Radio Free Kafiristan. Also a great show. Eric intellectually is a little higher up than I can catch all the time. Sometimes I have to re-listen and to understand it. Vito and Al, they speak to me because and when they see my name in the chat room, they know, oh, Hank's here. We got to dumb it down a bit. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff, the deplorable Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Awesome show. I don't get to listen to him enough, but, you know, you can also catch these, you know, after the fact, when you come into the website. Fridays, Conservative Casual Friday with Andrew Hare. That's the toughest one for me because I'm in a Kiwanis meeting every Friday. So, but I, one day when I wasn't, I got to call in and actually talk. So that was fun. Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam. And Sundays, Eric's back with real interfaith dialogue. And you know the drill there. You don't just go in there and talk to a man like Eric like that. You gotta sign up. You gotta get invested. You have to do the app, because what he doesn't want, because he's had it, is sleazeballs. None of us need sleazeballs, but when you're trying to talk real interfaith dialogue, that's the last thing you need, are sleazeballs. See, I mean, I shouldn't even have to tell you anybody that, but it's sad. But anyway, we got some people in the chat room. We got T. Bodie, for one. Got several people listening on the phones. Hawkeye Mike, I see his number. Brother Tommy, Sue from New Mexico. Sue's great about thank you so much, Sue. She retweets all my tweets. And judging by the number of retweets, she must have more followers than who's a real follower? I mean, she's probably got more followers than Obama. Hell, Obama throws like a girl, so it doesn't really matter. T-Bodie's listening on the phones, too. And hopefully we're going to get to talk to him a little bit later because I didn't get to him last week. He had to go and our two businesses, local businesses, independent businesses that we spoke with, had a lot to say. And Brother Tommy asked me, he says, well, they're not local to you. Well, one of them is, one of them's not. But the point being, I'm talking to small independent businesses. That's probably the better way of putting it. What it does is encourage people to buy local. And by the way, a good friend of mine here locally where I live called me up, I called him because I owed him a favor. And he said, hey, you know what? That was great last week. I've been looking up that paddleboard company. He was, I've been looking up paddleboards too. So you know what? He says, I got to ask though, could I do it? Could I stand up? Newsflash, folks. Yes. The short answer is yes. And you know what? You don't have to stand up if you don't want to. Brother Tommy always asks, are you worried about gators? There are gators. You know what? You don't go up to them and feed them or nothing. Mrs. Hank says she does. Mrs. Hank got knocked off her board by a manatee one time. That was hilarious. She just took a sip of something, and she's not going to like it. This is another lesson, folks. You know how sometimes you run out of an ingredient? Like one time long ago, I didn't have horseradish one time when I was making Bloody Marys years ago. So I thought, you know what? Blue cheese dressing's kind of tangy. So I used blue cheese dressing. That didn't work. Well, today I realized I had no half and half or almond milk for my iced coffee. So I used kefir. Man, that is grim. That is grim. Oh, kefir is basically drinkable yogurt. It's like a probiotic. We actually give it to our dog in the morning. I don't recommend it for iced coffee. I'm just saying it's grim. It's grim. By the way, if you want to talk to the show, several people here know the number. It's 319-527-6706. If you want to talk, you actually hit the one on your phone and I get a little signal. That's what I get. Also, you know, of course, blogtalkradio.com/global-patriot-radio. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see that I actually post the actual link to the show. So if you are on Twitter and you clicked on that link, it would bring you right here. I do that on Facebook as well. Someday I'll have a website and you can do it that way. And I'll send out email. I send text messages out as well. I should send an email, but can only do so much. What's in the news? We've got a lot going on this week. Some good stuff. As I said, hopefully we'll talk to T. Bodie later if he stays on. I hope he will. Sometimes controversial lawyer F. Lee Bailey died last week at age 87. He was under hospice care in Georgia. He'd actually lived there the last few years of his life. Now, the guy, he had a who's who of high-profile clients over the years. His first one was Dr. Sam Shepard, a.k.a. The Fugitive. Also Albert DeSalvo, a.k.a. The Boston Strangler. Army Captain Ernest Medina, he successfully defended him in the My Lai Massacre trial. And then Patty Hearst, she suspected that he was drunk in the latter part of the trial. She got 7 years in the tank for her activities with the Symbionese Liberation Army after being kidnapped by them. He actually saved her from any potential death penalty exposure, though. He teamed up with Robert Shapiro to defend Claude Dubuc, who was a marijuana dealer. That guy, he put up biochem stock as a settlement with the government, but he couldn't surrender it to the government since it was already being used as loan collateral to pay his lawyers. And then when Bailey tried to get the appreciated value, he looked kind of stupid not being able to surrender it. By the way, that's what eventually got him disbarred in Florida and then reciprocated in Massachusetts. He was part of the Dream Team that somehow got an acquittal for O.J. Simpson. And finally, this was one I loved. This was in Orlando. William and Chantal McCorkle. There are these cons and scammers. They do those real estate things. I'll even port partner with you. you just find foreclosures and I'll part you with, but let me know and I'll partner with you. Well, he didn't partner with people. He would actually try and go do the deals himself. They would show like helicopters and this mansion. Neither were his. He rented them, or he'd even have people drive boats to his place and park them there and use them as props in his real estate infomercials. Unbelievable. But yeah, Effley Bailey at 87. Last Friday, we lost Clarence Williams III, a.k.a. Link from the Mod Squad. You know, I think Vito, let's play that song if it's on here. Vito had it on here one time. I know why. He had it on because he was memorializing his former co-star, the late, great Peggy Lipton. And no, that's not on there. Mod Squad, we do not have Mod Squad for a soundbite. Anyway, it was that cool song. Anyway, Clarence Williams III, he played Link. He, along with Pete, who had this old woody wagon. Pete was rich, but he got kicked out of his family's house because he was such a rebel. So he bought a woody wagon. And so Link and Pete and Julie were these young hipsters. They all had criminal records, but they all had redeeming qualities. So Captain Adam Greer took them under his wing, molded them into effective undercover cops. They'd infiltrate like bars and discos and drug dens and the like. And, you know, in true TV crime drama fashion, they got every heat pack and punk off the street. Anyway, he was also he was the father of Prince's character in Purple Rain, the 1984 film Purple Rain. He was in The General's Daughter with John Travolta. He was an American Gangster with Denzel Williams, or Washington. Anyway, yeah, Clarence Williams, 30, passed away last week, 81 of colon cancer. Last Saturday, we saw the passing of Richard Robinson at age 84. Now, who was Richard Robinson? He was the CEO of Scholastic Books since 1975. And if I have to explain to you what Scholastic Books is, I'm not going to. I mean, more recently, they were the company that were able to get Harry Potter and the Hunger Games books into the United States. But before that, the Weekly Reader stuff, the books that you'd get, you know, when they do book fairs at school, that was Scholastic Books. Otherwise, if you haven't really heard of them, I can only assume you're not literate. You don't like reading for whatever reason. Pretty much everyone had exposure to Scholastic Books going up through college, had the opportunity to buy them. They also did a ton of book fairs in like Title I schools. I took part in one actually with our Kiwanis Club so kids from disadvantaged economic circumstances could have access to books. Great company and obviously a great man. Monday, we saw the passing of Douglas S. Kramer at age 89 of heart and kidney failure. As a TV producer, he brought us all the important series, at least important series for teenage boys in the 1970s, Wonder Woman, Love Boat, a.k.a. the Screw Canoe, and then into the 80s, the Dynasty and the Colbys. Guy even managed to sneak in 24 episodes of Star Trek. Former New York Giants head coach Jim Fossil passed away yesterday. He was 71. Evidently, he was under sedation in a Las Vegas hospital. He was being treated for chest pains, and then he suffered a heart attack. Now, you would think if you're in there under sedation being treated for chest pains, heart attack wouldn't be on the radar. Evidently, it was. He coached the Giants from 1997 to 2003, took them to the playoffs three times. They went to the Super Bowl in the 2000 season. That's where they lost to the Ravens. He was also head coach at Utah, University of Utah, back in 1985 to 89. That was before Urban Meyer and Kyle Whittingham brought them from basically a mid-major to a Power 5 team and a slot in the Pac-12. Let's get to some sports news. Last Sunday, there was a boxing card in suburban Miami, like Miami Gardens or Miami Heights or whatever. It had some real fights. It had some exhibition fights. It even had a championship fight. Most notable was the exhibition fight, 50-0 Floyd Mayweather against 0-1 YouTube personality Logan Paul. But it's funny, folks are actually disappointed and or surprised that Mayweather didn't knock him out. Look, here's a news flash. Mayweather is 44 years old. He was stipulated to weigh no more than 160, while Paul could weigh up to 190. For the record, Mayweather for the fight weighed in at 155, Paul at 189.5. And another thing under boxing rules, after the weigh-in, between weigh-in and fight time, weight gain is not checked, nor is it penalized. So you can go out and eat a friggin' boatload of food if you want after the weigh-in. It's estimated that Paul weighed 40 to 45 pounds more than Mayweather for the actual fight once they were in the ring. Let's also not forget, Floyd Mayweather's never been a KO artist. Google his record. He doesn't have a high percentage of KOs. And again, like I said, he's 44. He's given away 40 pounds. Here's the other thing. He made about $40 million for this, at least $40 million for this little exhibition. Judging by his comments, he doesn't mind making that kind of money, especially when it's so easy. So what would kill that golden goose? Well, knocking out novice fighters inside of two rounds every time he goes out, yeah, that would probably dry that well up. I mean, no self-respecting weekend warrior. By the way, Logan Paul and his brother Jake's a little more accomplished. Those guys are weekend warriors. Sorry to bring the news to some of you younger folks. Tube guy and then throwing some fists with people doesn't make you an actual boxer. Anyway, no weekend warrior is going to willingly submit to get knocked out in embarrassing fashion. You know, just to, and guess what? Sponsors and advertisers will stop shelling out the cash for that too. If they see it's a joke, I mean, you know. Oh, we'll always have celebrity boxing, though. We will. God, that was epic. If you ever saw celebrity boxing, the episode I watched, Danny Partridge got the TKO over Greg Brady, and then Tanya Harding bitch slapped Paula Jones. And literally, when I say she literally bitch slapped her. She wasn't like boxing. She was like slapping at her. Paula Jones kept turning around and like cowering and hiding her head. Screech knocked out Horseshack. May they both rest in peace. And then, of course, Joey Buttafuoco got the unanimous decision over China. Literally, they had Joey Buttafuoco fight China. Google it, man. Celebrity boxing. It was gold. It really was. Daryl Morey is in the news again, or more accurately, he's under attack again. If you remember, Daryl Morey is the one who faced major heat last year for tweeting out support of Hong Kong protesters. Actually, last year, back in 2019, he tweeted out support for Hong Kong protesters. It brought out the truly stupid, of course, like LaJuan James, who actually said Morey and others aren't educated or smart enough to comment on the status of Hong Kong being under attack from Red China. Yeah, LaJuan. No college. Daryl Morey. Two master's degrees. Yeah, Daryl Morey's dumb. Oh, taking another sip of that coffee with a kefir. Not good, but I need good iced coffee. Anyway, Daryl Morey's and has been fined $75,000, and the 76ers have been fined $75,000 for a tweet. Now, his tweet was a response to a tweet from Golden State Warriors Steph Curry. The tweet was basically supporting his younger brother, Seth, who this year joined the 76ers. So what did Daryl Morey tweet in response? Just in fun. Two words, join them. Actually, one word and one condensed word. Not join them, join them. Join and then apostrophe E-M. And then join your brother in the fun. So the NBA fines him $75,000 for tampering. And then an additional $75,000 is levied against the 76ers for Daryl Morey's conduct. Yeah, meanwhile, after tweeting a threat toward an Ohio police officer, LaJuan James faced no consequences. After breaking NBA protocol, going maskless to a party where other people were maskless, people outside the NBA bubble, no consequences for LaJuan. Yeah, the media is shocked at the NBA having its lowest ratings in decades, or the fact that fans rejoiced last week when LaJuan and the Lakers got bounced from the playoffs. They're really surprised by that. Ball news. Former Michigan State Spartan basketball star Keith Appling has been charged with the murder of the husband of his mother's cousin in Detroit on May 22nd. Yeah, he was previously charged with assault for an incident May 2nd in Jackson, Michigan. Suffice to say, you don't usually hear the phrase, quote, molding good character, unquote, when you're talking about Tom Izzo or the Spartans. This is but one reason why. It was, hey, last weekend on the track, on the human track, the women's track and field, we saw a world record, and we saw a world leading time this past weekend. Safwan Hassan of the Netherlands, she was running at a meet in the Netherlands called the Fanny Blankers-Koen Games. Fanny Blankers-Koen was the Dutch woman. She won 4 Olympic gold medals in 1948. She won the 100 meters, the 200 meters, ran on the 4x100-meter relay, and then the 80-meter hurdles. Anyway, at the Fanny Blankers-Koen Games, Safwan Hassan lowered the women's 10,000-meter world record by over 10 seconds. Meanwhile, Jamaica's Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce became the second-fastest women's 100-meter runner. Not the second-fastest time. She clocked a 10.63 at a meet in Kingston, Jamaica last weekend. Now, Flo Jo, if you remember, she ran that 10.49 at the Olympic trials. A lot of people said the wind wasn't read properly. Everybody said she was juiced. But Flo Jo also ran a 10.61 and a 10.62, so she has the three fastest times. But, yeah, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce passes up the USA's Carmelita Jeter, who clocked a 10.64 back in 2009. Meanwhile, South Africa, Caster Semenya, she's the one who was born intersex, was born with both male and female and male stuff, if you will. She's moving away from middle distances due to the hormone and testosterone restrictions. Anyway, she didn't get a qualifying time for the Tokyo Olympics in the 5,000 meters. So that's kind of sad. On the actual drug and doping front, American 100-meter Olympic gold medalist Brianna Rollins McNeil has been suspended for 5 years. Her second suspension for, quote, tampering within the results management process, end quote. Yeah, she's appealed it to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. She will be able to run provisionally in this month's Olympic trials, possibly next month's Olympics if she wins an appeal. Otherwise, her 5-year ban basically means she misses the Tokyo Olympics next month and the Paris Olympics in 2024. Yeah, that's kind of all or nothing, isn't it? On the big track, original Kentucky Derby favorite Essential Quality finally got a win in the Triple Crown circuit, taking last Saturday's Belmont Stakes over Hot Rod Charlie. Hot Rod Charlie basically jumped out to the lead, was challenged by a couple horses along the way, including Rombauer, who won the Preakness. Essential Quality basically took control out of the last turn and pretty much held a one-plus length lead down the home stretch. It kind of redeems Essential Quality for the Derby loss, especially when you consider that the Derby winner, Medina Spirit, is probably going to be disqualified after that second positive test for betamethasone. Medina Spirit, as well as other Bob Baffert-trained horses, as well as Bob Baffert himself, were notably absent from Belmont after being banned from the state's track for 2 years. Baffert, on the heels of that second positive, is also banned at Churchill Downs for 2 years. I know Brother Tommy has said it's the doctor or the stable, or the doctor of the stable or the barn that's going to get the axe, not Bob Baffert. I got to wonder, though, with suspensions in New York State, now Kentucky, he's still got clouds hanging over him in California and Arkansas. I got to believe that Bob Baffert may well fall out of favor. That's just my, I mean, who's going to hire him if they can't get their horses onto the tracks? I mean, I got to think that people are going to leave him now. And, you know, not much coming up for him. By the way, though, Bob Baffert and the owners of Medina Spirit are suing Kentucky racing officials for a temporary injunction to ensure due process and for custody of the remnant samples to prove the horse was not injected. What is, depends on what the definition of is, Alex. Yeah, the answer, what do Jeopardy and most horse tracks have in common? What is the daily double, Hank? That is correct. In other words, folks, this is a stupid lawsuit. But like horse tracks, Jeopardy and horse tracks have the daily double. So, speaking of horse racing, here are 5 things I was told I didn't know about Secretariat, according to Trivia Today. This came up today. He had 3 white socks. Now, I don't mean he wore 3 white tube socks. He had on his hoofs or whatever, on the fetlock. He had three white socks. He holds the fastest time in the Kentucky Derby. I already knew that. He was buried whole. Didn't know that. Basically, I thought every horse was buried whole. I watched Animal House. I said, oh, no, Animal House, they had to cut it up with a chainsaw, didn't they? No, but I thought otherwise every horse was buried whole. Not true. Even racehorses. His heart was 2.5 times larger than the average horse. Knew that one. And this is a dumb one. This is actually a thing you didn't know about Secretariat. He graced the cover of many magazines. Who didn't know that was alive back then? Or that's just a dumb one. Rather curious decision. The Navy is not going to let cornerback Cameron Kinley play football this coming season for your Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Bucks. He was a cornerback. I guess he plays cornerback, not safety, just a cornerback at Navy. This is despite a memo, if you'll remember, signed by former Secretary of Defense Mark Esper at President Trump's urging back in 2019 that would allow athletes at the nation's service academies to delay active military duty in order to play pro sports. Yeah, I remember that. Kinley's management group pointed out that there are two Air Force Academy grads and one Army grad that are going to be allowed to play. Now, Kinley signed as an undrafted free agent. He participated last month in Tampa Bay's rookie minicamp. He was a team captain at Navy. He was a class president. He graduated last week. Upon graduation, he presented a gift to alleged Vice President Kamala Harris after her speech at the ceremony. Wow. Just wow. Evidently, that wasn't enough to get him on the field this fall. I kind of got mixed feelings on that. I mean, assuming that Navy has 25 seniors on their team each year, and the same for Army and Air Force, if even half of those are good enough to play pro ball, that's 30 or 40 guys the military could lose or delay each year. Now you're saying, 30 or 40 guys. These are still their best and brightest. And I'll tell you what I mean in a little bit. Couple that, though, with the new wussification of our military, and you got a real problem, like down the road. On the other hand, part of the reason that a guy is at the academy in the first place is for his prowess on the field. Now, look, if a guy can get into one of the academies, but he can't pursue the sport after graduation, I can see guys blowing off service academies down the road in favor of a program that could really get him in. We can't say he owes it to our country to go to a service academy. But again, to just simply say, you can get out. I get it. I get both sides. Give La Dopey Nostra just one or two more years, and we might see all sports eliminated at the service academies anyway. Probably they'll have like drag shows and transgender opera productions. And of course, let's not forget the annual ceremonial painting of the rainbow tank. On the golf course, Ricky Fowler, he fell short in his attempt to qualify for the U.S. Open later this month. Yeah, didn't make it. This will be the first Open he's missed since 2010. He was forced to qualify because he fell out of the top 60 in the world golf rankings, well out. Other notables that didn't qualify, former British Open and PGA champ Padraig Harrington and former PGA champs Keegan Bradley and Jason Duffner. Some politics. Well, yeah, things continue to look kind of bleak for Dr. Fauci. Former Trump advisor Peter Navarro told interviewers on Newsmax, I guess, that – actually, I shouldn't say I guess. I saw it. So told them that Fauci not only knew COVID-19 was lab-engineered in a Wuhan lab, but that Fauci had supported gain-of-function research since 2011. In addition, though, of course, emails acquired show that Fauci has engaged in a cover-up of this, really since the declaration of the pandemic by the World Health Organization last year. National Institute of Health has also helped fund this gain-of-function research. Look, as Navarro pointed out, Fauci not only lied at news conferences, he actively worked to discredit those people saying that the virus came from the Wuhan lab and not a wet market. But he also, through emails, he recruited other doctors and scientists to discredit that possibility. Actively recruited them. Now, he also actively recruited them, we know through email, to say that hydrochloroquine and AZM were not effective treatments. Here's the thing. This dork was on, I don't remember if it was MSDNC or CNBC. He said an attack on him is an attack on the science. Newsflash, he didn't follow the science. And he lied about whatever science he claimed to be following. I mean, this is ridiculous. When are they going to fire this guy? I mean, look, I'm going to bring this in. I know it's, you know, I'm not a journalist, okay? I'm not a media person. So I'm not required to be biased. And not only that, when anything I talk about, I openly talk about. But this guy's supposedly a government employee. He used media. Media enabled him. But more than that, they used each other and they were in concert together to help thwart the reelection of President Donald Trump. Now, you remember at one point Fauci said, I just think Joe Biden's better equipped to handle it. Well, how can he say that when he's openly lying? Openly lying about the origin of the virus. Openly lying about possible treatments. How can he say, follow the science? How could he have, he lied when he said Joe Biden was better equipped. He literally lied. And the media enabled it. Bastard. Also on Newsmax, Dick Morris came up with something. He said, look, there's something that's lost. You know, the media is all their negative coverage of President Trump's speech at the GOP convention for North Carolina. He said they missed a stroke of political brilliance by Donald Trump. He said at the convention, President Trump's daughter-in-law, Laura, announced she was not running for the Senate seat, being vacated by Richard Burr. No biggie. At the same time, though, President Trump did endorse a candidate, Ted Budd. What this effectively does, it chases out the idea of multiple candidates running on a pro-Trump platform. As T. Bodie pointed out to me on the phone yesterday, that North Carolina GOP has had to come out and say, we don't endorse anybody. That's their job. Not to support a single candidate in the primary. But I'll tell you what, people that give to the GOP, people that are going to support candidates are going to support Ted Budd if Donald Trump is endorsing him. Oh, yeah, the Never Trumpers, yeah, but those people are going away down the road, hopefully. But yeah, it allows them to unify behind one candidate versus beating each other up and spending all their money during the primaries and before the general elections. Morris said something else, though. Dick Morris, he said Trump was spot on when he said that using political muscle or creating laws to favor one race over another is racism. Look, the Dems have done that. BLM, Antifa, critical race theory, they're trying to create things to favor one race over another. He said basically what President Trump did, though, he put the GOP almost in a position of being the Martin Luther King to Big Left's BLM and CRT. I mean, he's right. Dick Morris is, you know, for all his faults, very observant. Epoch Times ran a really interesting article on exactly why a judge in Georgia is willing to hear a case from vote observers and officials. And these are from both pro and both Trump voters and non-Trump voters, basically, with respect to the vote fraud that occurred there in 2020, November, and probably 2021 in January. As part of an order, Judge Brian Amaro has requested officials guard the warehouse where the ballots are stored around the clock until an inspection date can be set. Naturally, an alarm was triggered on May 29th. Door was unlocked and wide open. Here, I'm going to read a little bit for you from the article, just because there's some salient points. Okay. Poll manager Susie Voiles, basically, she was sorting through a stack, and what she noticed was a really odd pattern. Uniformity. Now you're saying uniform. All the markings for Biden were the same. They all had perfectly filled in ovals. Perfectly. And like as if it was done by a machine. What she also noticed, each of those darkened bubbles featured an identical white void inside in the shape of a crescent, a little tiny crescent. Now, what this indicates is that they've been marked with toner ink instead of pen or pencil. Now, here's what she also noticed. She said all the ballots were printed on different stock paper than the others as part of the hand count for the mail-in and absentee ballots. None of them were folded or creased. See where that's going? You ever seen a Dropbox envelope or a mail-in envelope where the ballot didn't have to be folded inside? Anybody here ever voted absentee and gotten a large manila mailer envelope? Don't think so. Basically, she said it looked like they'd been done from a copying machine. All of them, she said, were strangely pristine. Three other poll workers observed the same thing in stacks of absentee ballots for Biden processed by the county, i.e. Fulton County. They've used these affidavits. They've convinced the judge to unseal all of the 147,000 mail-in ballots counted in Fulton County. They argue potentially tens of thousands may have been manufactured. By the way, Biden won that race in Georgia by 12,000 votes. Thanks, of course, to that late surge of mail-in ballots. Garland Favorito is the lead petitioner in the case. He says, we have what is most surely absentee ballot fraud in Fulton County. Yep, he said they remain the suspect ballots remain in custody of officials, but there are now five pallets of shrink-wrapped ballots in the county warehouse. Now, it looks like June 21st is when they'll resolve these motions, but there's been roadblocks. The county electioneers have filed suit to stop it, to throw it out. You had that break-in, or not a break-in, just somehow the door was, an alarm was triggered, the door was found unlocked and wide open, and no guards there. Happened shortly after the deputies drove away from the building in their patrol cars around 4 o'clock. They say that the ballot room was never breached or compromised. Garland Favorito says, how do we know that? Yeah. How do we know that? Now, here's the thing. As I'm reading through this article, and I'm finding it, so one of these was not a Trump voter, did not vote for Trump. And I'm not sure if it's Favorito or one of the others, but did not vote for Donald Trump and is saying, this is a problem. In other words, the integrity of the election is the problem. They're not saying, you know, these people, they're not even coming forward saying, Trump won, Trump won, Trump won. What they're saying is, we have a problem. And it's like I've said, it's not how much fraud there was. If there was fraud, it has to be investigated. So here's what we know. What do we have? Here's what we have. We have uniform ballots, all allegedly mail-in or Dropbox, which are not folded, have different print quality than other mail-in or Dropbox ballots, and are gathered in sheets that appear to have been photocopied. Why, the question? Well, the stacks of ballots were, in the words of one observer, strangely pristine. In addition, observers noticed that uniform pattern to the ballots, all marked for Biden, which gives pause. Quickly filled in oval, the toner crescent-shaped void in the center. All on different, you know, all of them on the same but different paper stock than the other ones. Look, as I've said before, this doesn't shock me, not in the least. But here's where I differ with a lot of folks, specifically as it pertains to Dopey Joe himself. So many people are saying, you know, he's a lifelong cheater. He's a lifelong scammer. He's a plagiarist. Can you look at Dopey Joe now? And frankly, since he became the presumptive nominee last year, can you look at Dopey Joe and tell me that he could have masterminded this or even been a part of it? Not a chance. Not in my opinion, anyway. In fact, I think that is why you've seen very little of Dopey Joe since then. Look, I also think you haven't seen hide or hair of Hunter Biden. Not the same reason, but in essence, Dopey Joe couldn't know about it. He couldn't be allowed to know about it because there's no telling what he will blab, when he'll blab it, and to whom he will blab it. Now, in the case of Hunter, that's a little different, but every public appearance from him now, every time he's accessible to the media, he puts the whole damn thing in danger with his overseas stuff. Now, look, having the elder abuser-in-chief, Jill Biden, keep Joe in the basement takes Joe and Jill out of the fray, keeping Hunter wherever he is, and he's probably in a coked-up, messed-up haze, I'm sure. That solves that problem. So we have that. Then we have attempted intrusion into the very place where the ballots are stored. Gee, nothing odd there. We have Fulton County electioneers, mostly Democrats, naturally, pulling out all the stops to block any type of audit. Worse than that, these people won't even acknowledge that the recount perfectly duplicated the original count method. They don't even acknowledge that that's a problem. Like, oh, what's the problem? I mean, I just don't even. Hey, welcome Duck Northwest Media into the chat room. Duck is over on Vito's show on Monday nights as well. So, see, cool people come to these chat rooms. I'm just saying. Two senators, one Dem and one GOP, are requesting travel records of Supreme Court justices as part of a larger ethics investigation. Per Fox News, Democrat Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island and Republican John Kennedy of Louisiana, presumably no relation, are requesting records dating back to 2011 as part of a larger investigation under the Ethics in Government Act of 1978 and the Ethics Reform Act of 1989. Jesus, we only had 11 years of good ethics in government, huh? Apparently, the two senators are concerned that members of the judiciary have far less stringent rules than those in Congress and the White House, while judges, in particular Supreme Court judges, justices, face far less scrutiny and demands for transparency. Now, the letter was sent to Attorney General Merrick Garland and U.S. Marshals Service Director Donald Washington. Senators say the travel documents are needed in order to determine how Supreme Court justices' transparency standards stack up to and, quote, improve the consistency of disclosure standards across the three branches of government, unquote. Yeah, I'm eagerly looking to see how that one goes. Eagerly looking. Hey, we have a guest on the phones that wants to talk, so.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone.
Brother Tommy, what's up?
Man, I want Black Betty from now on. He did a tremendous rendition of Black Betty. I want Black Betty from now on.
Who did?
Tom Jones? Oh, Black Betty. Did a tremendous rendition of Black Betty.
Are you Black Betty?
Ben.
Tom Jones did that?
He's got a rendition of it, yes, and it's fantastic. And if you can see the video, oh, my God, I model myself after the guy at the nightclub if I was younger. God, he's got some moves. It's a great one. Great video. Anywho, check that one out. Listen, probably not too many F-bombs coming up because I've got a serious thing to talk about here real quick. And it's not you, but it's the Republicans. It's the Republicans. You know, podcasts are different, but the Republicans that talk about the election being stolen, let me tell you the massive problem with it. I'm going to two quick stories. I, like a lot of people, the first time I ever voted was for Donald Trump. Okay? And a lot of people were the first time they ever voted because it gave them hope. Now, here's the problem. I talked to a guy not too long ago.
It wasn't Barzini, was it?
No, it wasn't Barzini. I know Barzini. but this gentleman suggests to me, like you're suggesting, I don't have any concrete convictions one way or the other if the election was stolen. But he says to me in two different sentences, the election was stolen. And the next sentence he says to me is, we got to get out and vote. And I'm like, yeah, that's absolutely nonsensical. If I'm convinced the election is stolen, Why am I going to go vote? Why am I going to waste my time in line? Now, we're Florida, so I can mail it in. But why would I even waste it? You know, it's kind of like, what is that team that played the Globetrotters? The Washington Generals, I think?
Or the New Jersey Generals or the Boston Shamrocks and, yeah, several others.
Yeah, whatever. Anyways, it would be like really wanting to win as a player and joining one of those teams that play the Globetrotters and then finally realizing it's fixed. It's fixed. You know, it's like the only thing that'll happen is I'll be at the ballot box pulling down the lever and Metal Arc will come out with a barrel of confetti and throw it on me. You know, if it's that fixed, you know, if it's that fixed, seriously, if it's that fixed, why would anyone that's practical vote? And I'm not talking about you, but I'm talking about people, politicians and stuff. They don't realize what they're saying because the logical person, more likely than not, the logical, not emotional, logical is probably going to lean a little bit right, or at least in the center. But the logical person is going to be like, I'll be fucking damned if I'm going to wait an hour and a half in line to vote if I think it's fixed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, to me, the danger, not podcasts, but that, to me, is the danger of the politician saying it's fixed, it's fixed, it's fixed. The logical person says, well, then fuck it. I'm not wasting my fucking time. You know, and so
yeah,
to me,
yeah, but when you're talking to me, you're talking to somebody who used to go watch pro wrestling. So,
well, no,
but
I'm not saying
with podcasts.
I know
what you're saying.
My belief is podcasts, anything goes.
No.
But when you get people like Ted Cruz or Rubio, and I don't know, I don't follow it anymore. But I think I heard Cruz say something once to the effect and stuff. And it's like you're just killing the cerebral voter. The cerebral voter is going to say, "Oh, it's fixed. Okay, fuck it. I'm not wasting my time."
Well, no, you mean there's a point. On Vito's show, there's a guy that, and he called in on this show, the guy that called in from Minnesota talking about how there was no flu cases now that they have COVID cases in Minnesota. He said on Vito's show, he says, I'm not sure why I should go out and vote again. You know, he said the same thing.
That's the point. If you think your vote doesn't matter. Now, we all have that cliche, one vote's not going to matter. And you know what? You want the truth of the matter. That cliche is absolutely accurate. One vote's not going to matter. And then don't give me the shit. Well, if everyone said that, then no one would vote. Well, everyone doesn't say that, you know. So, but anyways, it does discourage the voter if they think their vote doesn't count. So for the Republicans to tell everyone, and I've heard some good, strong, staunch Republicans say, we got to get off this kick. Now I understand what they're saying, because what it does to the psyche is like you almost feel like you're being played for a fool. I mailed in the second vote for Trump, but the first one I went to a library. I stood in line for 45 minutes, and I don't pat myself on the back for doing civic duty like a lot of people do. I actually think it's a waste of time. But when I'm told that my vote doesn't matter, I will no longer waste my time. And that's why I think the big boys in the Republican Party should just pull the throttle back, not go Hillary, because this is identical to the 2016 election. Don't go Hillary, just like, all right, fuck it, and then mobilize the forces. But, no, that's the only point I wanted to make. I mean,
no, I think it's an excellent point.
The other point also being Black Betty from now on. All right, go on.
Okay. No, my thing is, when you say, and I agree to a point, but here's the thing, as I said, even if all three states that are really being talked about for audits, meaning Arizona, Georgia, and Pennsylvania, there are other states where they're talking about it, but that, you know, those are the main three. Even then, you know, if audit shows that Trump won, I think people need to get off this. Trump's going to come back to being president. And there are people still on Facebook that are saying it'll happen in August. It'll happen in August.
Never happen.
Yeah, it'll never happen. And he would be nuts to want to do it at this point. I mean, I sure wouldn't do it, you know. But I mean, I think the point is that the point of these really is to, you know, to strengthen the reasoning behind. I mean, if an audit in Georgia shows this, then guess what? When Biden's out there saying, "Oh, it's Jim Crow Part 2," really, you moron, you're saying it's Jim Crow Part 2, but you cheated. No, not you, but your campaign cheated. So
right,
I think
here's
that's,
the other
that's
side
the reason
of the coin
is to bolster the confidence in the election system.
Other side of the
is
coin,
to justify
though,
these
that,
laws.
And I understand that. The other side of the coin to that, though, is arguably one of the greatest politicians of all time. Obviously, with dubious other distinctions, but Richard Nixon, he fucking knew that he got Chicago, but the Daily Machine or whatever, Kennedy and stuff, he finally said, fuck it, I'm not going to challenge it, it's not good for the country. And he was absolutely right. It's not good for the country, because the minute people start second-guessing election results, as the integrity of election results, that's really, really a slippery slope. And
yeah.
I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying what you do is you cut your losses. To keep
yep.
on harping on it and harping on it does not do good. And the only one it hurts is the logical voter. The logical voter
yeah.
says, fuck it. The emotional voter says, I don't care. They're going to still vote. Well, the emotional voter is the Democrats. Now, we're not getting a presidency again in our lifetime. I'll tell you that. With all this domestic...
I wouldn't be so sure.
Domestic immigration, California, all going to Texas and Arizona. New York, New Jersey, all going to Florida. They win Texas, and they weren't that far last election, a little bit, but everyone's going to Texas, and they bring their ilk, their bullshit with them when they go there. In other words, I'm leaving California because of the taxes. I'm going to Texas. Guess what they're going to do? They're going to vote Democrat again. No,
but see,
full
that,
well,
as T. Bodie's pointing out in the chat room, that's exactly why they need to have these audits. Is to,
no, I disagree.
You know, it's not a, I mean, I don't
okay,
think the domestic immigration.
Let's say they have audits. Let's say they have audits. Now we're in a constitutional crisis. They have audits. Now what? What are you going to do? Take Biden out and put Trump back
no,
in?
No.
What's the end game of the audit?
What the audit does is it justifies the need for election reform. It justifies, you know, when they say, oh, Georgia, that's a racist law. Everybody knows it's not. Anybody with a brain knows that that's not a racist law.
Justifies
the law. It justifies why it's needed. It justifies, look, this fraud.
Okay. Who controls the Senate?
It's not about who controls them. It's about who controls the states. And that's what I was going to say. That's something that Rush Limbaugh said before he died that was brilliant. I mean, he was saying it days after the election. He was saying, look, this isn't about, you know, restoring the office to President Trump. This is about, at a state level and at a local level, getting election laws tightened up and getting it, you know, so that this can't happen again. And that's what it's about. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, the idea of stuffing ballot boxes. Well, that
happened. No, incidentally, Georgia's going to be going blue, too. Georgia's going to be going blue, too, next election, just so you know that. But go on, I'm sorry.
I don't. But no, but that's what it's for. It's to show that, look, this is what happened, and that's why it's got to stop. So.
But who's going to implement it and why? The states are also very democratic. Why are they going to initiate it? Hell, they're the ones saying we want people that can, to vote that don't even have IDs. Well, what is their incentive, in other words?
Right. No, the states are doing it. Well, again, that's a straw man argument to say that we want people to vote who don't have IDs when they also want them to have vaccine passports and they want them to have IDs to buy guns and ammunition and stuff like that.
I couldn't agree more that it's a straw man argument. But the point is, that's how they play the game. My point is, I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it'll never get through. That's how they play the game.
It's already gotten through in some states. I mean, election reform has passed.
You listen to what Kamala Harris said a couple of days ago. If Donald Trump ever said that, it would be 24/7 nonstop coverage about,
sure,
well, I haven't been to Europe either. And the point is, the media carries their water. There's just no way it's going to change. I hate to be the cynic. I'm just preparing. There's no way.
I think you should always be prepared, but the point is, you can't be defeatist about it either. So. Anyway, hey,
well,
I gotta get
you
back.
You can be defeatist when the argument is the elections are fixed. Now, if that's the end game from the Republicans, the elections are fixed, well, then I don't know what to be other than defeatist. If it's fixed, why wouldn't one be
well,
a defeatist?
No, I think what they're saying, just to close it, is that they were saying because of COVID, they used COVID to be able to do this, and that's not going to happen again. COVID or no COVID, you're going to vote like a normal person. So.
We'll see. I'll believe it when I see it. Anywho, Black Betty next time.
Okay, we'll do. We'll talk to you later,
man.
In
a bit. Good
luck.
We'll send
you off.
Bye-bye.
Let's send him off again. Brother Tommy, it's not unusual. Yeah, okay. Brother, he pointed out that since I'm Hank Jones, he's Tom Jones, since he's Brother Tommy. So, hey, welcome bringing it boy to the room. Brother Warren from New Orleans Wake Up was here a bit earlier. Now, I know he gets some flack for showing up on some conservative shows, and Brother Warren is not outwardly liberal. He's overtly liberal. He's a self-professed liberal. But he's not a bad guy, and but he left because he probably didn't like what brother of Tommy and I were talking about. But welcome, boy. He's in with Duck. A12 Iggy Mom was here for a little bit, took off. Brother Warren, the one I want to tell you, he has a show called New Orleans Wake Up. And most of these topics are stuff that I will never agree with. And I will just, I laugh when I get the alerts. But he had one on John Coltrane. Now, for those that don't know, Hank Jones, I didn't take the name of Hank Jones from the piano player. There's a jazz piano player and composer. I took it from another character, which someone will be able to tell me someday in some kind of contest. But anyway, Brother Warren did this show on John Coltrane. And if you like jazz, it's one of those things that shows you that you can bridge the gap between political disagreement. You know, it was a fascinating show. Look for it. New Orleans Wake Up and look for the John Coltrane show. It was actually quite good. I wish he was still in here so I could, he could hear my shout out that I gave him. So, but anyway, Brother Tommy talking it, you know, he's been sort of defeatist like that. He sort of said, why are we doing this? It's not going to go anywhere. Back to the news from the Gateway Pundit. Frankly, I should devote a month of shows just reading from that site for the entire show. Great stuff. We have a nice little story from them about Obama Attorney General Eric Holder. By the way, the only attorney general ever held in contempt of Congress. Holder is urging the Department of Justice, the very department he corrupted, to step in and stop the Maricopa County, Arizona election audit. Look, like other demi-crooks, Holder is saying the audit's a mess and a sham. He actually called it a fraudit. Now, look, I'll say this for the guy. If anyone knows fraud, it's Eric Holder. If anyone is a master of trying to hinder an audit, it's Eric Holder. Look, basically, he has no leg to stand on. Process has been by the book. Look, despite attempts from all of Big Left, the media, the electioneers, the Arizona Democrat Party, all of them trying to say otherwise. In fact, this is exactly what scares Big Left. It's by the book. But what scares Big Left even more is that election officials and elected officials from other states, notably Georgia and Pennsylvania, have been observing and visiting during this process. We heard earlier about what's happening in Georgia. And I'll tell you, it scares Big Left. I'll tell you why. I didn't want to go into this with Brother Tommy, but I'll tell you why. There's three reasons. One, it's open and transparent. Observation has been allowed throughout the process. This has not been in some back room. It's been open. It's been revelatory. Some of what has been claimed has come to fruition. And it justifies those states where election reform gets in the way of outright cheating, while at the same time, by the way, preserving equal voting rights for all. Now, how is that wrong in Big Left's eyes? It's simple. Despite their claims, Big Left doesn't want equal voting rights. If Big Left wanted equal voting rights, they would have made sure that drop boxes in Pennsylvania were spread equally and by population, not concentrated in Democrat strongholds or in inner city Philadelphia. They would have allowed GOP observers equal time in any and all contested precincts rather than trying to lock them out or tell them to sit on the other side and shut up. And I'll tell you what, most important, they would have allowed America to see their candidate. None of that happened. Couldn't allow it to happen. This from the Epic Times. A Virginia judge has ordered the Loudoun County school system to reinstate a teacher who refused to use students' preferred pronouns. The school system suspended elementary school teacher Byron Tanner Cross after Cross spoke up at a public meeting. The Alliance for Defending Freedom, trying to think of who the main, the only one I know is Christiana Holcomb because she's worked on some of the cases that I've followed, but when it comes to transgenders in sports. But the Alliance for Defending Freedom is representing Cross. In a May 27th meeting, which included public input from private citizens, Cross spoke against the proposal to use only pronouns preferred by students versus using gender-based pronouns based on birth gender. The school suspended Cross from teaching. They barred him from all school buildings and grounds without prior permission and approval. And get this, they required him to be available on request, official investigation, and whether or not his comments were disruptive. Now, Judge James E. Plowman of Virginia's 20th Judicial Circuit agreed with the plaintiff, i.e. Cross, that he was speaking as a private citizen at a public forum and that he was not at his place of employment during normal working hours. The judge also agreed that the plaintiff will likely prevail and that he likely suffered irreparable harm in terms of employment and First Amendment rights, saying that the suspension was due to Cross's speech, that he was barred from other speech, and that the suspension likely inhibits other teachers and employees from exercising their right to free speech based on this suspension. A couple comments. Look, this will settle out of court. Several reasons. One, I can't imagine Byron Tanner Cross wants to stay in that particular shithole of a school system. Number two, this is going to cost Loudoun County school system a lot more than Byron Tanner Cross's salary and benefits. It's very likely that by enacting the suspension and it becoming public, Byron Tanner Cross will be able to legit argue that future employment prospects are hindered in light of these actions and views expressed by other educators and other school system administrators. Think about that. Let's not kid ourselves. School system administrators are not the types that are going to speak up in this manner on behalf of a Byron Tanner Cross. This, in the end, though, it's just another symptom of how messed up our education system has become. Nothing more, nothing less. Despite a judge in California, yes, California, calling one of their many gun bans unconstitutional, the U.S. Department of Justice is proposing yet another gun restriction rule. Ugh. This one, it's from the Epoch Times. I'm going to read just a portion here. I'm scanning it. I don't read it, folks. Sometimes I read the whole thing. This one I'm not going to. The rule states, this is the proposed rule, that basically should determine on a case-by-case basis whether a particular gun, when configured with a stabilizing brace, quote, bears the objective features of a firearm designed and intended to be fired from the shoulder and is thus subject to the National Firearms Act. The use of a purported stabilizing brace cannot be a tool to circumvent the National Firearms Act or the Gun Control Act and the prohibition on the unregistered possession of short-barreled rifles. It was proposed to the Federal Register. Members of the public have 90 days to submit comments. This is the scariest part. They also published model legislation that it claims will make it easier for states to create laws governing risk protection orders, aka red flag laws, which states are already allowing. It'll authorize courts to temporarily bar people from owning or accessing firearms. We're not even going to go down on this one, down this road on the red flag firearms part. It's just the National Shooting Sports Foundation has provided comment and will continue to provide comment. Gun Owners of America. Now, here's what Gun Owners of America said. Joe Biden knows that he cannot beat gun owners in Congress. So instead, he's abusing his executive authority, throwing the full weight of the federal bureaucracy behind his attack on gun owners. Yep. They're saying new laws are necessary. Well, you know what? How about we observe the laws that are already in existence? Remember I talked about Eric Holder a few items ago? Fast and furious. Guy sending firearms to Mexico to the cartels. And we need new gun laws? Look, here's some comment. How many mass shootings have ever been aided or conducted with stabilizing braces? Seriously, how many? Look, maybe the one in Las Vegas. Maybe. And here's the weird thing there. Somehow we know almost nothing about that shooting because media hasn't reported on it, of course. We almost know nothing about the specifics. And already, though, we know how much the FBI has degraded itself in other investigations to ever trust anything they would say about that shooting. You know what groups do use certain types of apparatus like that? Military, law enforcement, and hunters. Why? For accuracy, to ensure maximum shooting efficiency. Yeah, you really think gangsters in Chicago or Philly or Detroit are concerned with this stuff? Short answer is no. Most of the inner city shootings you see, they're spray and pray. You know, even the shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando was spray and pray. Now, look, the Obama FBI effort to change the facts notwithstanding, it was spray and pray. There was no bump stock. There were no stabilizing braces, no tripods, no sniper sticks. It was spray and pray. Look, we won't even go down the road of the phonied-up assertion that the gun was a Sig Sauer MCX semi-auto. Jeepers, people, listen to the 9/11 audio, 911 audio. And ask yourself if that was a semi-auto. And then ask yourself if you think it's humanly possible to cut the refire cycle from 3.5 seconds to less than 1 second. Yeah, basically the recycle fire time on a semi-auto is about 3.5 seconds. And that's somebody who really knows what the hell they're doing. What you hear on that audio is what some people call staccato fire, i.e. it sounded like a machine gun. That's simply not possible with a semi-automatic rifle. Bump stock, no bump stock, doesn't matter. So the better question becomes, why the cover-up? But again, look, I'm not going down that road, at least not any further. But look, this is the second time we've heard about a judge, that would be speaking in California, who's come out in favor of Second Amendment rights. That's two judges now. In places you wouldn't expect it. California and Virginia. Upholding First and Second Amendment rights. Now, Brother Tommy was being defeatist, and look, I get some of what he's talking about, but on the other hand, look, there's some positive here. We have a case, or two cases now, of members of the judiciary upholding our constitutional rights. You can't get mad at that. Let's get a little lighthearted. Chris Harrison, you know who he is? Maybe you don't. He's gone from the Bachelor franchise. Now, that doesn't affect me. It doesn't affect me at all. It does disturb me, though. Now, look, you remember that show Dateline to Catch a Predator? That guy's name, I think, was Chris Hansen. And there are some similarities. I mean, like, remember on that Dateline show, a guy would walk in, some perv would walk in, knock on the door and say, I brought candy, and then be standing there like some disgusted pervy, I brought candy, and then that guy would come out from like behind a closet door, can I have some of that candy? And he had that creepy, it was creepy. Now, Chris Harrison isn't that creepy. Chris Harrison seems like a pretty cool guy, but he would get creepy on the show. Like, they, you know, they, the Bachelor and Bachelorette, they go and they have these things where they go in the honeymoon suite or whatever beforehand, the testing suite, the fantasy suite, that's what it's called, the fantasy suite. So they go in the fantasy suite and they say, you know, did you go to the fantasy suite? They'd say, yes. And then he would look at him like real serious. And how was it? I'm sorry. That's creepy. That was creepy. And I just don't see Chris Harrison as that kind of creepy guy. Anyway, he defended a bachelorette a couple months ago. She appeared at some antebellum-themed party. Now, look, I don't go to those types of parties. Not because I'm anti-South or anti-Civil War or anti- I just don't go to those types of parties. But in initially stepping away, when he said he's stepping away, one thing he did, he acquired the services of a race coach. A frigging race coach? What the hell? I mean, what exactly is a race coach? A race? I mean, that's beyond... I mean, I don't know the guy. I've seen him on TV and stuff. He was on. He hosted like the syndicated version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He seems like a decent guy, a nice guy. He was just defending someone's right to say something. Somebody who went to a fraternity, a sorority party in college. I mean, are we really getting on people for parties they went to in college? I mean, like, we don't seem to have cared that Justin Trudeau went blackface or that Governor Ralph Northam went blackface. We chalked it up to them being in college or just being impetuous. Chris Harrison wasn't the one at the party. He was just defending someone, just defending her. And they absolutely crucified him, so he stepped away. Well, now supposedly he's gone, and it's an eight-figure settlement, so good for him on that score. And to finish off politics. Here's this disturbing story. Seems a contributor to MSDNC and the New York Slime is disturbed seeing pickup trucks and the American flag along with Trump stickers and anything anti-Biden. This is from the Western Journal. She actually, I think she was on Morning Blow with his Morning Ho. Mara Gay is her name. And during her interview, she talked about going to a very dear friend in Long Island, seeing she was disturbed by dozens of American flags displayed by supporters of former President Donald Trump. She also said, I was on Long Island, and I was really disturbed. I saw, dozens and dozens of pickup trucks with, explicatives against Joe Biden on the back of them, Trump flags, in some cases just dozens of American flags, which, is also just disturbing. She then said, essentially the message was clear. It was, this is my country. This is not your country. I own this. And she said, Trump supporters have to know, be able to separate Americanness and whiteness. Is this lady insane? I mean, seriously, did they bring in somebody to check to make sure she's not insane? What in the hell? I mean, seriously, what in the hell is she talking about? She's saying that people with pickup trucks and American flags are saying this is my country and not yours? I mean, I don't even know where. I mean, I just don't even. She said, I think that as long as they see Americanness as the same as one with whiteness, this is going to continue. What? What? I mean, that offends the crap out of me. I'm sorry. That really offends me. And I'm going to text him first to see if he's going to get on. Let's see. T. Bodie, if you are ready, I know you're still in the chat room, and I see your phone still there. If you're ready, hit your one so we can talk. I want to get you on here. I told you I wanted to get you on here. I wanted to talk about this. This is my buddy T. Bodie, if he hits the one and comes on. If he hits the one and comes on, come on, man. Come on. Come on. You said I want you on. Someone else is here. Says Global Patriot Radio. I don't know if it's Vito or who it could be. Oh, it's Paul. Hey, Paul. Paul's in the room. Paul Sutliff, the deplorable Paul Sutliff, goes with his Sutliffian report every Thursday. Is it 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, Paul? Would you clarify for us? Because I'm never clear on those. Shout it out in the chat room, Paul. Okay, folks, I'm going to bring on a buddy of mine. Since college friend, roomed together in college for a summer and hung out a lot. We went our separate ways after college, as many people do, but we've always kept in touch. He's had an interesting history. He played football for a while in college. Injury derailed that dream, so to speak, but he then made his way to the University of Iowa and is a Hawk fan. He was, if you ever Hawk games from the early 1980s, if you ever saw a huge, huge Hawk flag, that was him. The true purpose wasn't the flag. It was to bring in a 12-pack in the bag that he carried the flag in. But since you can't do that anymore and he doesn't do that, I don't feel like I'm giving away anything. Anyway, T. Bodie, how's it going, man?
I only followed the your front and lead.
So, anyway, go ahead.
Not to mention drifting down rivers at 4 a.m. on an inner tube with a.
It was 7 a.m. It was 7 a.m. We needed light. Yeah, I told them about this story, but just going to quickly recap. Years ago, we were at a party in the summer, and bars were closed. The keg was still going, but the party had broken up at my fraternity, and so T. Bodie said, you know, the bowling alleys might be opening up soon. We could go get some beers there. And I said, why don't we get something to carry some beer in and go tube it? And there was no going back from that. So we tubed down the Iowa River with a stock pot full of beer and a couple of plastic cups and a couple of tubes. That was
epic.
So anyway, you know, what the reason, as he knows, that brought him on, the last couple of years, he has been very involved in the venue arena entertainment stuff. Think concerts, shows, et cetera. He's been very involved in production, everything from backstage production to probably glad handing the stars and stuff like that. And way back when we were talking early about the impact that this was going to have, that COVID was going to have, he chimed in the chat room that this was really hurting concerts and venues and things like that. So any idea, T. Bodie, any idea how much the financial impact has been?
Well, I give you a straight stat. If you want to look at the big guys like Live Nation that almost went out of business because of everything. In 2019, Live Nation did 46 some million in sales. And in 2020, they did 7.6 million in sales. That was one of the few stats I wrote down here prior to talking to you, Hank.
Okay.
So that pretty much shows how much that dried up for the biggest of the big ones. But that effect, you know, COVID affected everybody. And you can talk about, you know, affected the catering and food and beer and the stage and sound and lighting companies, security companies, stagehand companies, the rental companies that rent the generators and the lifts and tour bus companies, the ticketing companies, the venues, the agents, and, of course, you know, the bands and the artists themselves. Everybody
sure.
was affected. Only so, now are we starting to see things lighten up.
What were some high-profile events in the Midwest where you are? What are some of the high-profile events that got affected? Anything in particular that?
Oh, well, pretty much every major, I mean, you know, Lollapalooza and all those in Chicago.
Yeah.
And you look at what's out in California with Coachella. But, you know, I know that some of these are coming back online. Bonnaroo's coming up in September, and I think Lollapalooza's back on for this year in August. Electric Carnival out of Las Vegas. I worked with the head of that in putting together the largest Latino festival in the country, which was called Los Dells up in Wisconsin Dells area in 2019. They didn't do it last year, and they probably will not do it again moving forward.
Okay.
So, you know, and then this all the way down to the smaller shows, you know, the county fairs and the state fairs. And, you know, a lot of these artists are coming back. Certainly the B artists and C artists are out there performing again now. But the big ones, the arena acts, you're not going to see those until at least fall. I think some are starting to announce new dates in the fall, potentially. Certainly some of the things are being pushed to 2022 now.
Okay.
So
tell us one that's being revived in your neck of the woods. You guys have a big event coming up.
So one of the ones I've been involved with now for going on 15 years, we're in our 20th year, is locally is a celebration. And we only get about 9,000 to 10,000 per year for it. We didn't have it last year. We got Cheap Trick and 38 Special coming on this year in about through 2.5-3 weeks. And our ticket sales are mirroring pretty much what we did for 2019 with Sammy Hagar. So we're excited about that. I know some other local or more local events in the state of Iowa and Minnesota that I've been involved with are not coming on, or their ticket sales are not quite what they were. And then there's a couple that they're gangbusters, even better than what they had been.
So Celebration, and where is that taking place? Where is Celebration taking place?
I'm in Fort Dodge, Iowa, a town of about 30,000. We do a grassroots marketing blitz around the 100-mile radius, stretching down to Des Moines, up to Spencer, and over to Sioux City. We trade out about 150 grand worth of radio advertising, and we put up about 2,500 posters, and we'll get between 7,500 and 10,000. I think we're probably going to be in that 8,500 range for this show, which we're excited about.
And it's Cheap Trick and 38 Special. That's pretty.
Yeah, we pretty solid. Classic. Yeah. Yep.
And now, any warm up acts for that show?
So 38 Special is going to be the direct support for Cheap Trick. And then we always have a local band that we have open up. Usually you have to get artist approval from the headliner to have some.
You mean for a local band to do a warm-up. Okay,
yeah,
I got you.
Exactly, on the same stage, et cetera. And it's big. It's big for those bands. It's a resume maker for them. But we certainly thought out, and we have a list, you know, an arm's length long of local bands that want to play and open up on our stage. We're, again, in our 20th year, so some of these bands definitely are worthy of playing on there. Some of the better guitarists and drummers I've seen are in local bands. I've seen a lot of them.
Yeah. So when is this?
Oh, yeah.
What's the date?
We're coming up on July 2nd. We've got a board of 12 or 13 individuals. It was supposed to be 17, but we haven't filled four of those spaces. And we cover all areas, and everyone kind of knows what their position is. Yeah. And
so how many people are part of this production? Like how many people will be setting up stage, helping assist the band, you know, all that. So how many people are part of it then? How many people does it take to put on?
We utilize about 400 to 450 volunteers.
Wow.
Of which handle all our areas. We've got our site and facilities area, which, you know, brings in the porta potties and the generators and lights and tents and golf carts and ATVs. And we've got our parking and transportation. I think we use about 100 people just to be parking along. Food and beverage, beer tents. We don't use outside food vendors, so we staff those pretty heavily. Ushers and post-show cleanup. We've got our VIP area. Band hospitality and logistics for that, you know, the band hosting them. My wife helps out on that. She's the one that gets to rub noses with the, you know, Billy Gibbons and stuff and serve them food and say, hi, how's your day going? But,
wow.
We've got our front gate ticketing people and marketing and promotions, and then you got your stage hands and staging people, just, you know, security, electricians, police, EMS, photographers, and press. We only pay about 50 people. We pay the venue workers for post-show cleanup because no one ever shows up to volunteer to clean up.
Yeah.
And,
when you said beer tent?
What's that?
Did I hear you right? There's a beer tent?
We have four or five beer tents surrounded in different areas of our venue for this event.
Okay, folks, if you're in central Iowa or western Iowa, there's a beer tent at Celebration, so be thinking about that.
Yeah, we brought up a specialty, the Cowboy Scientist was a specialty barbecue team out of Texas that was touring in the area, and we brought them in for 2 years in a row. That was kind of a cool thing. They brought in a bunch of craft beer with them, but we don't have them this year. They were place winners in all these barbecue contests around the Midwest, Kansas City area.
Yeah. What's the effect? Like, are there people that are from out of town? So do hotels and motels see an influx of people? Or?
So, yeah, we fill up all the hotels in the area, and certainly all the restaurants appreciate what we do. Our crowds were, you know, 3,000 to 5,000, and it was mostly locals. As we continue to grow and get bigger acts, and we went from, you know, the Foreigner and REOs and Styx up to where we're at, you know, Boston, Leonard Skinner, ZZ Top. Those bands are more expensive bands, so they bring more people. People buy for the band. And so our crowd, we're now in 18 or 19 states online, and our online sales, we're able to track that. And we sell all over the state of Iowa. Like I said, we do quite a bit of trade for radio advertising, you know, where they're giving away tickets on the air and calling now. And the first, you know, we give away almost 4,000 tickets and every year. And we follow the statistics of it. To a year, we don't get more than 40% back. It's always between 37% and 41%, 42%.
Wow.
So that's a great way to get free advertising for us. It works because those people that come, they all spend on average, $20 to $25 per person once they're in the venue. So that's money and revenue that we can bring in that way too. So it helps.
That's excellent.
Yeah, we do a very good chance of marketing. Because of that, I've worked around, and I worked some of the other shows in the state and involved in putting on. Dubuque does America's River Fest. That's not going to happen anymore, not because of COVID, but it ran its course, and he just doesn't want to feel because of COVID that it's just going to be up against too much to bring it back anyhow.
That's too bad.
However, the same person's doing it runs the Field of Dreams events and Major League Baseball coming here in August. I'll be working with him. He's doing three or four shows in Dyersville, Iowa, with the Field of Dreams event. So that would be kind of fun and exciting. I've worked some of those high-profile events with the athletes there, and that's always fun too.
Excellent.
Now, the arena band, you know, like I said, they're going to hold off those. You know, I've done a lot of stage handing, too, with these, with the bigger, you know, the Foo Fighters and bands like that, you know, the Aerosmiths and Red Hot Chili Peppers and all those type of bands that come through the arenas. And they're not, I'm not seeing anything in the Midwest, anyhow, possibly down south in your area. The arenas will start up a little sooner. But those bigger shows like that, I don't see those.
Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, it's, you know. Okay, since we're coming up against the hard end, you knew this was going to happen this fall. What are you thinking for the Hawks?
Oh, well, I think we get our typical 8 or 9 wins, and we're happy.
Yeah.
I'd like to see us, like we were saying the other day, I'd like to see us not start out 2-2.
And
if we can get out to a 4-0 start, I think that we've got a very good team and we'll be top 10.
Yeah. Do you think though, overall, that the program is getting more to the where we're reloading and not rebuilding? I mean, people talk about that. You think we're there yet?
Yeah, I don't see us getting to a point where we're going to get a whole lot better and getting bigger names. I mean, you know, I see we're in the hunt again for another Espinoza, Benza.
Espinoza.
Freshman right now, but they made an offer to him. You know, we may not see that kid. He may turn out to be so good and go to somewhere else. I don't know.
Yeah, that would be
tough. A lot of competition within the university programs.
So, yeah, are you going to be going to any games? You going to be going to any games or no?
I expect to make it at least to one at home game. And this Iowa State game, you know, was proposed by our good buddy Tish that, you know, he sees College Game Day maybe coming to Ames for that one. It could be a top 10 matchup early in the year. It could be. He could be right. That'd be kind of a fun one to go to.
Yeah, definitely.
I've got a friend who is a Division I former basketball coach that we've talked about that he just bought a big touring bus and likes to go to see concerts and Hawkeye games. And he's talked about taking up for a road trip or two. So maybe we'll go see Indy Hawk.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. So anyway, hey, I got to cut you short because we are out of time. But T. Bodie, thank you for being on, folks. T. Bodie, who's been on top of what's happening in the venue entertainment arena. It's going to take a while for stuff to come back, but it's getting there. So
don't be afraid to go to these shows. You know, I think that, you know, if you want to wear a mask, great, but most of them aren't requiring that. And, you know, we always paint lines in our grass to 4 to 5 feet deep to make rows for the first 150 rows, and we'll probably go a little deeper, maybe 6-10 inches deeper in each of those, make a little wider and stuff. But I know, if you don't want to be up there, don't go up there, and you can stay away from people and still enjoy great live music. It's worth
it. Excellent. Well, thanks for being on, my friend.
Thank you, folks,
we're out of time. We really ran up against it, but I want to thank everyone for being here, bringing it, boy, Duck Northwest Media, T. Bodie, Sue from New Mexico, Brother Tommy, Hawkeye Mike, all being on. And folks, be safe this weekend. Have a great weekend. God bless.